Eric Clapton, and you did a magnificent job last night.
Oh, thanks.
The opening of the Prince's Trust concert. Now, this is an interesting twosome because of the brilliance, the diversity, and yet the similarity of you two as guitar players. Mm. You've been friends long?
Yeah, a fair bit now. You know, Eric got up and played with us here in London a few years ago, and it's just gone on from there, really. It's good. I mean, I like, you know, playing with Eric's band because it's fun making Eric sound as good as possible, I think, being part of the band. And there's no pressure, you know, you don't have to sing or anything like that, so you can just get stuck in and play some guitar the way, you know, the way you like to play.
Would you like to tour a little?
Well, I have done already. I have done it.
Some more?
Oh, sure. But I've been out twice now with Eric and played lots and lots of gigs with him. And he's standing in for Jack in our band as well at a couple of concerts here in London and this big Wembley thing on the 11th, which, because Jack is just had twins in America, can't make the gig. So Eric's done a wonderful job learning his stuff.
And you are enjoying working with Eric too, because you are a person who is a workaholic. And when you're not involved personally or with dire straits, you like to do other things and produce. Let's talk about that a little. You know, what are you doing currently? I mean, your future now.
I'm going to try not to do anything. I'm going to try and stop for a bit. Because since the last tour, I haven't really... I did an album for Willie DeVille. I did the Princess Bride soundtrack for Rob Reiner. And I did an album... I did a couple of tracks with Joan Armatrading, and I did... produced 7 tracks for Randy Newman, and that album hasn't come out yet. And I've just finished doing them, and now I'm stuck with all of this stuff here. So I'm hoping after that I'll be able to sort of check into an asylum someplace and just have a quiet time. Drink some carrot juice don't like carrot juice.
Did you get a chance to hear the Crossroads collection? You know, when you had some spare time, or did you have any spare time?
No,
CD, Crossroads.
But I mean, you know, I know all of Eric's stuff pretty well.
I think he knows some of yours, too.
He does now.
Last night, yeah.
He does now. Yeah. He's had to learn it now. He's up, he's up there now doing it. Yeah, he'd have to for Wembley, yeah.
Well, he did mention he needed a little money. Mm-hmm. A little spending money, and he wanted to work with you. Mm.
Well, he's played before, you know. So, yeah. He's... It's not quite as hard for him as he thought.
Brothers in Arms, I think, right? He was working with you then, even back then.
Not for Brothers, not on the album, but he did lend me a guitar or two, to acoustics and stuff, to help make the album, which was very, very kind of him to lend me his favorite guitar. Took it all the way over to Montserrat, too.
I got the feeling last night at Prince's Trust that I could be wrong, that you both feed off each other very well. I mean, it just seems like that it isn't really something new, that you know each other, and it seems like the guitars know each other, and you come out and he comes out, and it just seems like it blends.
Yeah, I suppose we're both rooted in... we play differently, but we're both rooted in the same kind of stuff. So we both tend to like the same kind of stuff. And so I suppose there's a similarity comes from blues playing, basically.
Mark, I'd like to get, maybe if you would, a comment about Prince's Trust and what it means to you. You know, the American audiences, of course, are not as aware of exactly what the Trust is, mm-hmm. what it does. And also, the Freedom Fest, which is coming up for you, the Nelson Mandela benefit, mm-hmm. Maybe you'd like to, I mean, you're putting in hours and hours and hours of work and talent. Tell us something about that.
Well, it's funny how much time a charity thing start to take up in your life. It's you're very privileged to be able to give, to make things happen for charity. You can do a show, you can generate an awful lot of money very quickly. And it's a great privilege to be able to do that. But the office now is getting dozens and dozens of, and I'm sure everybody else's offices are too. You must be familiar with this yourself on the radio, with the letters coming in from And what we've had to do really is to have a list of charities that we generally become associated with, and there's a few of them. There's you know, through the Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital, for example, in England, is something that we've been involved with for a long time. Music therapy we've been involved in for a long time, because it's a direct use of music, so musicians have obviously gotten involved with that. The Prince's Trust has used music a lot for a lot of years now. It's just a thing which helps young people in all many, many different ways. People who are handicapped either financially or physically or whatever, there's all kinds of... and if they have some kind of self-help scheme in mind, things on the drawing board, then the trust is there to see whether these things can be made into realities. And the activities of the trust are really too numerous to mention. There's so many different areas that it gets involved with, and it's been fun in a way, because it's been a good focal point for lots of musicians to get together in strange circumstances, which is obviously something which attracts me. It takes a lot of players out of their usual setup and into something else, which is something which I've been interested in from the very beginning. I mean, anything that is a bit out of the ordinary. And I was just concerned when we started doing it, I was concerned about it becoming a bit of an old boys club. So I took part in the first one and stayed out of the second one, because I thought that it would be better to have new people coming in. And I still think it would. And I mean, I'm only involved in this one as part of Eric's band, really. And I think it would be a good idea to keep the people encouraging new people to come in all the time, so that it doesn't become too institutionalized, you know. Now the Nelson Mandela thing is something else. We've been involved with this from the very beginning, way back in 1979, I think it was, our first album, or 78, went to number one all over the world, and it was also number one in South Africa. And we didn't want the money, so we gave the money to Amnesty International and made a statement condemning apartheid, as a result of which we were banned by the South African government, the media, and banned on the radio and whatever, what have you, which we regard as a pretty good compliment. And we just got involved. That was long before the Sun City and all of this stuff was making headlines. And so we've been involved really with them from the very beginning, and I've helped out with the secret policeman's balls for Amnesty here in London with Chet Atkins. And so this is really, you know, Nelson Mandela's 70th birthday concert is really just a continuation of the same thing. It's a continuation of the same commitment. You know, the man is a major symbol now. He's a focal point.
I suppose it would be a dumb question to ask if the broadcast or television parts of Saturday's show, which is the Freedom Fest for Nelson Mandela, it will not be allowed in South Africa.
Oh, I should imagine it'll be on every... No, yeah. I don't know whether they're going to get to hear... I'm sure they will get to hear about it. I mean, you know, the people there can still buy the records and stuff like that. I know they can get them. So... I know that they're going to find out that it's going on.
So for the Freedom Fest show, Dire Straits will be intact, and Eric will be playing with you at that concert.
Yeah, Eric will be playing for Jack, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, Jack will be looking at his new babies.
And you're looking forward to
this and the
show.
TV set, yes, too, I hope. Yeah. Yeah, oh, sure, you know. I mean, the rehearsals have been great. The band sounds magnificent, and...
Mark, what's the current status of the group then? You're intact, but you're not going to do any touring. You're going to take a break after these shows?
Well, the last tour was about 2 years long. I don't know how long it was. It seemed like it was a mega tour. I'd just like to be able to turn around at home.
Maybe do some writing?
Yeah, exactly. Learn some new chords. Be great. So I can't, I've no idea really. It'd be great to get the band together. I mean, I've really enjoyed getting the band together again for this. I thought we'd have sort of forgotten how to do it, but we haven't.
You mentioned new people on the shows instead of, you know, a heavy lineup of the veterans and so forth and the superstars.
Yeah.
Last night, I think, was a good example. The new kid, Rick Astley, and Wet, 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 and Tapa, and so forth. And I think the crowd seemed to just blend everything together and move with everything.
Sure. I mean, when it's a good cause, you know, when it's a charity, then I think people get the spirit of the thing. And they don't mind if there's technical hang-ups or whatever. They just go along with it. Great, yeah, great. Get stuck in. You know, that's the idea. I mean, it's very difficult technically to get one of these things together. You know, people's monitors are never right. And you can't expect, you get up there, you can't hear a word you're singing. You can't hear much of what you're playing, but you do it. You do it by whatever, and you get it done. You have to get stuck in on those things, and you expect everybody to have the same attitude. And there's no room there to start complaining that you can't hear the hi-hat.
The past for you, Mark Knopfler, has been always been colorful and interesting. What about the Dylan era with you producing an album and all, and Bob, of course, at that particular time, and many changes, as he always has been, but he's never really been into many changes, but he thinks he has. I thought it was brilliant, the combination of you. Was that good chemistry?
Yeah, I got on with Bob from the very beginning. That was way back. Slow Train Coming was the first time I worked with Bob, and then produced Infidels for him. You never know what to expect next, obviously. You know, I mean, even with Infidels, I mean, I never got to mix that record, even though I sort of produced it. You know, because I had to go away on tour in Germany, and Bob was under some kind of thing with CBS Records to turn out records within a certain amount of time, and it got mixed while I was away, which I think is a shame, but there's still some good stuff on it. And, you know, I got up to play with Bob in Australia, and he played with us. So I haven't seen him for ages now, but I'm sure whenever I see him, it's always good.
You hold all records in Australia, in Dire Straits. I mean, no one has come anywhere near their record history. Each country has their own record history, but you certainly did a job down under.
Well, we just liked it there, you know. Just
they liked you.
So we did, just because we liked playing there, we did a lot of gigs there. I think 3 months of playing down there last time.
All records, all sold out records, most people ever attending concerts. Nice feather in the cap.
Well, I've got a very soft spot for Australia and Australians. Great people.
Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah. Tina. Mega woman.
You mentioned, when we talked about it before, the charity concerts and, you know, I think the world looks and respects our industry, our part of the industry, for things like Live Aid and Farm Aid and Prince's Trust, and now it will be Freedom Fest and Mandela. And then there's the audience side where they would like to have more of Mark Knopfler in Dire Straits, more of this, more of that. And you touched on the problem of everybody, you know, trying to do something to help the charity and keep the show within realm.
Yeah.
Is there to be a limitation, do you think?
Well, there has, just because of that. I mean, it's just what I was saying before about the sheer amount of, you know, by the time you've got 7 or 8 charities that you're involved with, you're just going to start diluting yourself. You know, and that's just speaking for us. So I don't know. I should imagine it's exactly the same for everybody else. You can't do everything.
And yet the Noblest is exactly what you have done, because, you know, it's a fact now, and it is history, that I'm sure in the last few years, up to and including right now while we're talking, that this has never happened in the music industry before. There has always been something. There's always been one or two causes. There has been the cancer and leukemia, the T.J. Martell Foundation that the record industry has gotten behind, and a few things that are obvious, but and everyone really wants to help, but there is a thing. But no one can now look at our industry and not say this is absolutely incredible.
Oh, I mean, it's in England. I mean, the amount of money that's given to charity every year is phenomenal. It's just generated by the public. It's phenomenal. They have telethons, and in the States, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's a shame in some ways that it has to be that way, because the government's attitude over here is not exactly conducive. You know, some of these things you've got to. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that a children's hospital has to be, that the money to for a children's hospital has to be found from the public. But there you are. It is incredible. It is amazing the amount of money that the public is prepared to shovel out every year in this country. Really, really astonishing. We just gave an awful lot of money to a cancer ward for young people who are too old for children's wards and too young for an adult's ward, and all of this. Anyway, this big thing, sports aid, sportsman's aid, which is another thing that we're sportsmen's thing that we got involved with. And it would have been really nice to have attended it at the night, you know. It would have been nice to have been there, but doing something else. So then you find yourself getting involved in things where you're just shoveling money that way, but you can't actually be there. There is a danger of it, just all the effort and the involvement being diluted.
Well, you're going to be leaving this rehearsal for your show at Hammersmith to go do the Prince's Trust again and rehearse again for that, and then perform, and then turn around and come back and do these shows, and then turn around and go out to Wembley and rehearse. And
yeah, it's a serious week. It's been a serious week. Rehearsing at Brixton just to get the crew and the band sorted out with Eric and get into the thing for Hammersmith and Wembley. And then rehearsing with Eric for the Prince's Trust shows. And then turning up for the Prince's Trust stuff, sound check in there, do the show, turn up here, rehearse for Hammersmith, go back to the Royal Albert Hall early this evening for a lineup, do another Prince's Trust show, go home, sleep, get up, come here and rehearse. Then we've got two gigs here that we've got to do. Go home, sleep, get on a bus, go to Wembley, sound check, go home, sleep, come out, do the Wembley gig. Should be finished by Sunday, I think.
Mark, a comment on, like all musicians and artists who perform, you follow what you can hear of new things, and we do that too, and it seems as if lately there is a little lack of interesting or exciting new artists or new material. Have you found that true? Do you have anybody that you like, and have you found that there's a little shortage?
There are always lots of people that I like. I'm not really the person to ask. You probably know more about what's going on than the musicians do. I mean, I can't speak for the musicians, obviously, but when you're really, really busy with... I've just been doing this Randy Newman stuff, for instance, in Los Angeles, which is fantastic, and I really loved every second of that. That's been a major thing, you know, for me, that. But you don't get the chance. I mean, I listened to some rap music when I was out there. For Salt and Pepper, I really like, and, there's a lot of good stuff going on. I saw a video of the Hot House Flowers, which I liked. I like T-Bone Burnett's new record. I heard some stuff that's been sent into a music contest for Musician Magazine that got played to me, and I heard some really good stuff on that. Lonesome Val from New York, and a band called The Tribe, who I thought were really good, you know? So there's some people to look out for.
Real good. Now, Mark Knopfler, as a young lad growing up, had records that he was listening to and influences and so forth, and that should be kind of fascinating all by itself. So we'll just erase the future and journey back and think about some of the things that when you were young really impressed you and kind of helped you. Well, how about the home life? What did you have in the way of music at home?
Well, eventually we got this record player that it was just a turntable. And it had to be, it wired up to the radio, so you played it through the radio speakers. That was the radio that I eventually destroyed with my guitar. And it didn't have an amplifier, so I blew that up. And because when my dad bought me a guitar, I didn't have the nerve to ask him for an amplifier as well. Then I got this electric guitar that I couldn't play. So I blew up the radio with it instead. used to listen to, didn't get the chance to buy many records, but I used to listen to friends' records and had some records of my own. And I think it all, you know, becomes an influence from about the age of 9, you know, or even before. It all goes in. I think even when you're very small and you're listening to songs from the shows, it goes in. It all goes in and comes out again. I mean, at the beginning of Tunnel of Love, for instance, I used a piece of music, Skater's Waltz, which was a music I used to hear when I was on the beach, playing in the sand as a little kid. So it all comes back somehow. It all goes in, you know. I mean, I could sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer all the way through when I was 18 months old. And I'm sure it goes in. I could play it now and sing it now. So I think it's you're just a sponge in it, and you absorb it, and then you squeeze it out. And it looks different. It's a different color, you know, when it comes out again. But it does come back out again, and it doesn't matter whether it's Elvis Presley or Buddy Holly. I mean, Buddy Holly. If you listen to Why Worry on Brothers in Arms, that's just me doing like Buddy Holly, really, in it or thinking about that and thinking about the Everlys, you know, and the Everlys recorded it. And it's a great feeling to have the Everlys record a song, because the Everly brothers have meant so much to you, you know. I mean, I had a little friend and we used to strum guitars, and he'd be one Everly brother and I'd be the other one. So it's great to meet the Everly brothers, great to play with the Everly brothers, great to see them recording your song. So it comes in and goes back out again. I mean, The Shadows, it might seem different. I mean, over in the States you had The Ventures, you know, but we had The Shadows. You had Duane Eddy, you know. I mean, I remember going around to a friend's house and making him play Because They're Young, you know, making him play it again and again and again, because it just sounded so great to me as a kid. Ricky Nelson, you know, Just a Little Too Much, Hello Mary Lou. All those things, serious influences. And in England we had Radio Luxembourg. The radio system's not the same, and we used to listen to Radio Luxembourg religiously. Hey Baby, Bruce Chanel, I Walk On By, Leroy Van Dyke, you know, Jimmy Justice songs, you know, Rose in Spanish Harlem, stuff like that, all kinds, Sam Cooke songs, everything. I mean, all you got to do is, you know, listen to Sam Cooke, and then listen to Terence Trent D'Arby, and you know about influence, serious influence. Jimi Hendrix, when I was a kid at school and I heard the intro to Hey Joe, I think I jumped in the air or something, you know. That's how important it was to me then. A real passion, you know, real passion. And it comes out here and there, little ways. And it might just be a little thing that you just use in some session, some way, some place, some time. It's serious stuff.
Great.
Now, I was just wondering, the first time you heard Clapton, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, please. You know, John Mayall record that one, you know, that was, oh, yeah, serious. Serious.
Did you ever imagine at that time that what you'd be doing, what you're doing now?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, when you're sitting in the studio next to Van Morrison and you got the headphones on and he's singing, and all the time, or Bob Dylan or something, and all the time that you spent as a kid listening to those records, it's a serious feeling. Because, and that shouldn't leave you, you know, you shouldn't get, it's easy to get a bit blasé about the whole thing and browned off with it and tired and whatever it is, and you're trying to get something together, but really, it's got to be a thrill. It's got to be a thrill. Always. People with soul, you know. People with soul, and to have been able to work with people with soul. And to have the respect of your peers is very important. I mean, it doesn't matter what you are, what walk of life you're involved in. If you have the respect of and, you know, if people like Randy Newman like your stuff, if people like Eric like, people like Ry Cooder say that they like your stuff, then it's important to you. It's very important to you. You have to feel good about what you're doing. And that's been a continuous pleasure to me.
But what he said about Nelson Mandela, I got a thing just to read about the history, because this is new history. When I was going to school, that part of history wasn't what it is now. I mean, I remember
it
something
also
about
was
the
not
Dutch.
Taught. It was not taught. It
no, was not of course taught. Not. But I remember something about the Dutch and didn't realize that there was a war recently. This is, I mean, it's not back in 1640 or something, mm-hmm. but around 1900 that the British and the Dutch were going at it pretty good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, consequently, nothing has ever been the same since for the majority of the population. And I didn't realize, I also found out there's a tremendous Asian population there as well as the black on a comparative basis to the British.
And
I
there's
mean.
Tribal stuff yeah. going on as well. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on down
well,
there.
I,
but I think that, but the most important thing, though, is to point out that in South Africa, you're talking about the only country in the world where discrimination is on the books. It's on the statute books. I mean, you can talk about the hypocrisy of other countries as much as you like, but the fact is it's not official. Whereas, you know, in South Africa, you're talking about it being official, and that is the crux of the matter. That's the point. That's the outrage.
Well, all I can say is thanks, buddy.
Okay,
really.
Anytime.
I know you're in the wireless, yeah.